You're listening to the Common Fan Podcast, a Husker football podcast for the common fan by the common fan.
Welcome back to the Common Fan Podcast. I am TJ Burkel, as always, alongside Matty Owens Sr. and Geoff in Lincoln. Friend of the program, Gary Sharp, is with us today. He's bopping his head to the catchy Common Fan jingle. I know you can't get enough of the Common Fan jingle, Gary.
You know, actually, I wish I had it as a ringtone.
You know, we can do it right there.
That's a great idea.
Is there a Common Fan store where we can get gear, special appearances? You guys do cameos. We can get the ringtone.
That's a great question. I'm glad you asked. Go to commonfan.co. That's commonfan.co. Subscribe on YouTube. Like this episode. Follow all the social media accounts. Sign up for the free newsletter and generally keep up with all the fun and frivolity of the Common Fans. Right now, Gary, we've got socks. That's what I can offer you is socks.
We got some socks.
Are socks still a thing? I mean, I know people, they're important.
I think people wear them.
Yeah, that's a valid point. I will agree with that.
Thank you.
I like to think I'm ahead of the curve on the style thing, so I'm going to say yes. Socks are still a big thing.
Yeah, you remember like a couple of years ago, like everybody was getting like companies were opening up just sock stores, and they were making a fortune, and everybody wanted to show off their socks. And I didn't know if that was still a thing.
I'm wearing a pair of Top Gun socks right now, just to give you some idea of what.
Nice. But the thing about the socks is, like this time of the year, how do you show them off? I mean, like if you're going to show them off, it's very awkward conversation because all of a sudden to a stranger, you lift your leg and you start pulling up your pant leg. And then that leads to another conversation.
Sure. Yeah.
I'd like to know, Geoff, why you think you are ahead of the curve on the fashion thing. I'd love to know.
I was waiting for somebody to say, hey, if I need fashion advice, who do I go to?
I'm sure you think that, Geoff.
I know that.
Okay.
I don't know. It's very, you have a very PJ Fleck.
Watch your mouth.
Style about you.
Okay. Take it easy.
All right. Let's get to the point here. Gary, there are so many questions surrounding Nebraska football as we kick off spring ball 2026. Kicking off spring ball earlier than ever, by the way. I don't remember a time of my consciousness where they started in February, which is neither here nor there. We're going to talk all about spring ball and some of the questions that are out there. If we have time, I'd love to get some of your thoughts on the Bill Moose book. I'm sure you've read it, or at least the two chapters in question. So maybe we'll dig into a little bit there. What do you think is the biggest question for Nebraska football as we look ahead to a daunting 2026 schedule?
Well, first of all, I think, you know, all four of us like football and in particular, like a team that plays in Lincoln. So it's okay to say you're excited about football because I like that football is back earlier. I will say this, you know, and we've had so many different variations of how coaches handle spring, because then they got the spring break and they take time off. Do you play later into April? Do you always try and end on Masters weekend so you can really mess with all of us that want to watch the Saturday at the Masters and have to do a spring game? I'm really intrigued by the back end of this. I get why they're starting sooner because you got new guys on campus, and I'd rather learn more about guys that put their hand in the dirt than put their hand on a mat in conditioning. But I'm intrigued by what they do post spring because they do have a lot of time post March 28th to kind of tweak some things they saw during spring. I think one of the biggest questions is, and this won't even be answered until September 5th, October 5th, November 5th, is what can Matt Rhule do to build trust with a fan base that has eroded trust at the end of last year and has looked at the last 2 years and said, where is the momentum? And maybe that's a good and a bad thing because they're a mystery team, but you're going into year four and you'd like to have something to grab onto, that you have some momentum that you can go, we have this and I think we can do this despite having to play this, if that makes sense.
I think that's a really good point, Gary. It's so fascinating to think about last year and think about like before the USC game, right? Mm-hmm. And enthusiasm is still, what were we, 6-2 at the time? Enthusiasm is still palpable. Yeah. We still have opportunities in front of us. You still have a chance to get to 8 or 9 wins. I think even falling short of that, like even if they finish 7-6, or let's say they get one more and they finish 8-4, I think what was so disconcerting for the fan base is Rhule showed up and he flipped the defense. And mm-hmm. you thought all along, okay, this is what he does. He's a defensive minded guy. He fixed the defense right away. This is how the program will always be grounded, right? And then if we can just fix special teams, if we can get a little bit better on offense, this thing's really going to take off. And so a lot of last year, they had fixed special teams. Defense was hanging on. They weren't as good as the previous 2 years. They were hanging on. And the offense was kind of like, you know, better with Dylan, still had its issues, offensive line issues, whatever. I think the last 3 games, seeing the bottom fall out and just getting pushed all over the field on both sides of the ball made everyone think, are we anywhere at all?
Yeah.
I think that's my philosophy on it's not even necessarily, okay, 7-6 again, that stinks. It's how this thing ended, which made you feel like, did anything we believe the last, is there any truth to anything we believed the last 3 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
One thing I do want to piggyback off of that was, Gary, you had mentioned building trust with Matt Rhule again. I do feel like this offseason is something Husker fans needed, and more or less something maybe just low-key, off the radar. Every year we always win the offseason, right? There's always big news, and as Husker fans, we can't help ourselves that we just buy into the hype every single time. And this year around, I feel like we know what the schedule's ahead of us. We haven't really heard a lot of news other than the transfer portal and the press conferences before spring practice started. I think that's a good way of building trust with the fan base is maybe just to lay low a little bit, Matt. Don't be out there. You don't have to be out there in front of everybody all the time trying to reassure us everything's going all right. Just do your thing. Let's get the job done and we'll get to the season. We'll see how it pans out.
Yeah, no, you go out in public and a year ago, people had a different reaction to you. And now a year later, people don't really, you know, they have a reaction, but it's not like, hey, there's Matt Rhule. We kind of have to pick a lane with what we want Rhule to do. Do we want him to talk? Do we not want him to talk? I think it's okay for Nebraska to be a little bit of a mystery team because we don't know how all this is going to mesh together, especially the offense. We don't know exactly what the defense is going to look like. Again, I say don't apologize for being excited about football, but I think, you know, the media kind of get hammered with, man, you keep feeding us all this, you know, making us drink this Kool-Aid. I think we're all smart enough that with our own eyes, we've watched enough football that we can determine if this is going to work or not, you know? And I think it's okay to be in wait and see mode because I will be honest. I think guys behind the scenes are in wait and see mode. They don't know how this is all going to work, you know? They didn't stand pat. At least that's a credit. But you have no idea how this is going to go together, okay? And then what you're up against? I mean, it could be the ultimate boom or bust type year, where you're like, "Ooh, that was surprising," or "Oh God, that was worse than I thought it was going to be."
Yeah. Yep.
Woof.
Indeed. Well, let's shift gears a little. I want to talk about personnel. You know, we know we're Husker fans, common fans are smart enough to know that we've got to get better in the trenches, right? You see what happened against Michigan and Penn State, some of these other teams, and we know that. But the most important position in sports is who's under center, who's the quarterback. Mm-hmm. And TJ shared with Jeff and I earlier this morning just a little slice of Tom Chattel's recent article. Basically kind of insinuating that there could be a quarterback competition. I mean, it's more than likely it's going to be Tony C, you know, the blonde-haired surfer-looking kid. Got some swagger to him. But I thought I think that's interesting, you know, that you see like, okay, well, maybe it's not a given, you know. But, you know, it's kind of like also we're paying this guy for 1 year. What are the odds he's not going to start? But do you have any thoughts on that, Gary?
Well, I just want to say one under the radar storyline of this offseason is Matty O's emerging man crush on Tony C. So we used to have handsome Bob Diaco, and now we've got handsome Tony C.
He looks like a quarterback in a movie. Like, he just does. Okay. Like, I mean, like Ronnie Sunshine Bass, right? Like, remember the Titans. Like, it's the blonde haired kid, you know, the cheerleaders want to date him. The guys want to be friends with him.
Shane Falco. I get
okay. That. Okay, so it's been a while since Nebraska's had that type of quarterback, and that's exactly what they need. You know, you need post Dillon. I think, you know, Dillon's arrival kind of changed the trajectory and what you wanted to do, maybe offensively, kind of around your program, learning how to handle a big brand like that. That now you almost get a little bit of a reset because you don't have Dillon. And now you add a guy who's got some real swagger, not some fake swagger where when you lead the team on the field and you run ahead of everybody else, that's not real swagger. I think Nebraska always starts at that position with a guy that's got some swagger that's real. And he could be Tommy Armstrong, guys. He could give you three plays of, oh, my God. And then there's the YOLO ball that, oh, geez, did Iowa intercept in the end zone again? I mean, But doesn't he play more into maybe the opening up the riverboat gambler that is the offensive coordinator for the first time in his time calling plays at Nebraska? And we finally get our return on investment of Dana Holgorsen, where we go, how in the hell is Dana Holgorsen the OC at Nebraska? How is that possible? But then we go, man, what if he's not Dana Holgorsen? This might be the year because of that quarterback that's got a little swag. I'll just go ahead, Matty, and call him Anthony for now. You stick with Tony, but he's got a little swagger that I think is real. And that, if you can get guys to want to play with a quarterback that's got real swagger, but also proves it and is not afraid to fail. And this might be the first time in a long time since Frost uttered those words of no fear of failure, that maybe Nebraska runs an offense that has no fear of failure. And they're not turning it over, but they're being successful because of the pieces they have around the quarterback.
Speaking of Frost, let's go there. No, just kidding. I want to build on something that you said, Gary, about the offense. So I feel like we've done this every year that Holgorsen's been there, which I guess this is only the second full year, but it's kind of like, okay, like certainly he's not going to run this boring Marcus Satterfield offense. Certainly they're going to do something different or more or fill in the blank. And so last year was Dillon, and we got a lot of the same, maybe a little bit more explosive. This year you have an entirely different quarterback, as you just talked about. And Rule has kind of said he wants to unleash Holgorsen. Like, it kind of, some comments have been made that made it sound like, okay, now we're going to really open it up on offense or maybe do something entirely different even. But then Holgorsen at the opening spring press conference kind of made some comments about, I know the offense better than I ever have. You're constantly refining, constantly trying to make it better. But to me, my mind went with that was, that sounds like he's talking about basically a variation of the same thing they've been doing. Do you have any insight on, is it going to be same, drastically different, somewhere in the middle? Any insight on where this offense goes?
Well, I think it'll be, you know, it's the whole conversation about the offense is, you know, Rule kind of in his opening press conference when he first got the job in that late November day, you know, he talked about what he wanted to do with his offense. And it never really has looked like that under center ball control run for 75 yards in the fourth quarter. You know, Dillon, getting a talent like Dillon changed that a little bit. But I still think they're not going to go back to that. So is Dana Holgorsen running Matt Rule's interpretation of what he thinks you can do offensively to win in the Big Ten? Or is it going to be a Holgorsen thing? I think it goes back to the quarterback. And you know, the thing with Calandria is you watched him play at UNLV and what Dan Mullen was able to do with him. They cut down greatly on turnovers. And I think the unpredictability. You know, Nebraska will have a quarterback that you're not really sure what he's going to do. Is he going to go out the back door? And is he going to have enough speed? Because I think he's fast, that he's going to get you a first down. So what does that open up to the offense? Because on the other side of the ball, the defensive coordinators are like, okay, this kid could do multiple things. And then you've got all these wide receivers, you got tight ends, you got running backs, man, what are we going to do? But to circle this back to something you brought up, TJ, about the trenches, I think Nebraska will look at this offense and, you know, and I credit Holgorsen for saying it's still, we still got to figure out what we do well. Is if that offensive line is what they think it can be, a veteran offensive line that'll be more athletic, then I think that'll let you know what they're going to do with this offense on how they want to attack it. I just hope that for the first time consistently since Holgorsen's been here, wouldn't you guys like to see more motion? Wouldn't you like to see more mesh? Wouldn't you like to see the middle of the field used a little bit more in the passing game?
Yes.
Yes to all of the above.
Yeah. And TJ's right. Like that's been a theme, as we've said it every year on the podcast. Is this the year that Dana Holgorsen's going to be able to run and do his own thing? So time will tell. We'll see. One thing I did want to pick your brain about, believe it or not, guys, I did watch some clips of press conferences. I'm serious.
I don't believe it.
I don't either.
I watched them. So I'm going to paraphrase here, but I know Matt Rhule had alluded to, they asked him like something that maybe he had learned from last season. And something he talked about was not hiring a coach to coach a system that maybe he doesn't necessarily believe in or even go with, namely the defense, like the 3-3-5, which just blew my mind for somebody that's a head coach in D1 football that just learned that now, that maybe you shouldn't hire somebody to coach a defense that maybe they're not the professional. That's not their area of expertise. So my real question here is now that he's learned this lesson, what do you think about Rob Arich? What are we dealing with here? Are we going to see this deep? What's your first impressions on this?
I really like him. I think if you look at his coaching ladder, it's like, okay, he's, you know, he didn't fall out of bed and end up on third base. I mean, he's kind of worked his way up. I think, you know, and I think when we were together last year, we talked about this, and you guys have alluded this too, of, you know, the defense they ran, you know, kind of to run it back from Tony White to John Butler. Hey, let's just run this defense back because we got enough guys here that are familiar with it. And, you know, we're essentially keeping all the same coaches. So let's just run it again. But then you didn't look at the personnel and you went, oh, wow, the personnel we lost last year could run it. This personnel is going to struggle in it. I think, and I've explained it this way. If you ever listen to Matt Rhule, whether at a press conference or on the side, talk about football, he's very simple. Okay. He's very basic about football and he doesn't use a lot of fluffy words. John Butler walks into the Cheesecake Factory and he says, give me that 20-page menu and that's my football. Okay. So they don't relate in how they're talking. Rob Orridge kind of talks more like Matt Rhule, how he explains football. Wasn't it refreshing last Thursday? And I know it was the first time that really anybody got to hear him, that he just, it's simple. It's just kind of simple football. You gotta put guys in the right place and you gotta go make plays. Okay. And that's our job as coaches, to put guys in the right place. And then when we do, and we give them those tools, we gotta have the right guys on the field to go make plays. And when that's the case, guys gotta make plays. That was nice and simple. We didn't need all of this roundabout stuff about what you do here and twisting and stunts and all that. Just go play ball, you know, and we're going to give you the tools pre and post snap. I like what he talked about post snap. We're going to give you those tools to create havoc, which they have got to increase an enormous amount on that side of the ball.
I'm glad you brought up the Cheesecake Factory menu. I just finished chapter 6. It's brilliant so far. Check the appendix in the back.
Do people still go to the Cheesecake Factory?
I think so. What do you think? I was going to ask, what do you think John Butler's go-to order is at the Cheesecake Factory?
That's a good question. It's got to be like, I would say like shepherd's pie.
There you go.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Yep. A little different.
He's a pretty fit looking guy. So I was going to say probably like a salad, maybe. I mean, probably not one of those heavy pasta dishes would be my guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
and those salads are deceiving though, too, TJ. There's a lot of hidden calories.
They
there.
Throw those calories in there and all of a sudden you're like, a salad is 1300 calories.
Yeah.
What the hell is a calorie? Yeah, I'm not following you guys. What is that?
Oh, Gary, we've talked a little bit about some of the position groups. And there's certain, like, you know, the offensive line's exciting now. We got some transfers in. They're more experienced. The wide receiver room looks good. But I've got a couple in mind that are a little concerning to me. What to you is the most concerning position group right now?
In offense or defense?
Either one.
until we see them with a who I think is a really good position coach in Corey Brown, it's going to go back to defensive line. I mean, Nebraska in the month of November, they're 2-10 under Matt Rhule. Can you run the ball? Can you stop the run? The game is a game of trenches. The November schedule from here on out is not getting any easier for Nebraska, because Nebraska, you play big, you play the month to remember is November, but you got to be able to stop the run and run the ball. And defensive line, until I see him in action in this kind of system, and if Nebraska can get pressure on the quarterback through the interior, that'll be the concern. You know, I just think, I think this team with all the moving parts is a question. You know, how are they going to fit together? They get a nice little runway of the first three games, but don't overlook Ohio. But how does it all come together? And then I just want something simple. You know, the expectation for this upcoming year, be better in November than you were in September. You know, and Nebraska was not as they were definitely at the end of the year. They were maybe the same as they were in September, and they took advantage of a schedule, but they weren't better. And that's been a problem over a couple of different coaching staffs, is what happens in November. I know you wear down, there's injuries, but that's on development and depth, okay? And coaching, you know, probably coaching more than players is my biggest concern. How all these new pieces are going to fit together, and how is the head man going to navigate when we get to Saturday? How is the offensive coordinator going to navigate when you get off script? When you get done with the first 15 plays, which are pretty good, what happens to the next 45 that go on in the game?
Just give the people something to believe in.
Yeah.
Say yes to yourself.
Well, you know, like last year at this time, we were talking, you know, I mean, hey, we got Dylan. Okay. So you had something. This year, you're like, okay, I watched the portal. I know some guys that are here. You know, some guys that are encouraging haven't hit the field yet. Like in spring, we want to see Malcolm Simpson, finally healthy at defensive line. He's a guy that looks like a Big Ten defensive lineman. Jones at wide receiver. He's a freak athlete, but he's in a deep and really good wide receiver room. You know, there's guys we're excited about that we've never seen play football at Nebraska. So it's kind of it's a mixed bag going into year number four of what to expect. I mean, don't you guys think when we get around to that time when Vegas starts releasing win totals, Nebraska will be right again at 6.5?
Your dear friend Michael Severe said with us recently 5.5, he thought.
And that might be predicated on the schedule. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of people that, you know, I got stopped the other day and someone said, you know, what would be the reaction if Nebraska started 5-0 but
Well, Gary, you're muted there. You muted yourself. Sorry.
My bad there. Sorry. I got stopped and, you know, it was like 5-0, you know, then you lose your next 7. What the hell's going on?
Yeah,
precisely.
So, so I know Geoff's got a question, but that leads me to something I wanted to ask you. First of all, I think like that would be meltdown city. That would be, we've officially entered hot seat territory, in my opinion. But what do you think? I think Rhule is actually helped in a way by the fact that people's expectations aren't super high, given recent performance plus challenging schedule.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think he has to do this year? Like, what's the minimum he has to do? Is it like, if he goes 7-5, does that have to include beating Oregon, Ohio State, or Indiana, or beating Iowa? Like, or what, like, does he have to go 8-4? Like, what does he have to do? Can you hear us, Gary?
Gary?
You must have some sound issues. Gary's having some sound issues. Yeah, no worries. All right, we lost him. I'm sure he's going to sign back in. That's going to be my guess.
He'll be back in, Common fans. Don't you worry. Stick with us. We're having some technical difficulties.
And I mean, thankfully, the three Common fans are on the cutting edge when it comes to technology. Mm. So I have
absolutely.
No doubt. I'm really anxious to get Gary's take on that question. It's something we've spent a whole episode on, but I think, you know, it's so funny. I think 7-5 under the right circumstances could be a home run season.
Yeah.
Here he is.
I'm sorry.
No problem.
Okay, Gary.
I don't know. It looked like you couldn't hear us there for a little bit, yeah. But we were just talking about, like, and we've done a whole episode on this. What does success look like for Matt Rhule in 2026? Like, I think everyone would say 8-4 or better, and we're dancing in the streets in Lincoln. But if it's 6-6, if it's 7-5, I mean, and I, let's say this, 5-7 or worse, and I think he's officially on hot seat territory. If it's 6-6, if it's 7-5 again, but that involves either beating Iowa or beating one of the three, you know, playoff teams on the schedule, is that success? Are the natives happy, or are they restless at that point?
Well, think about, they're going to have to be successful in 2026, they're going to have to do really three things that they have not done. Beat a ranked team. Okay. Also hold serve at home. All of a sudden, Nebraska doesn't play well at Memorial Stadium on a consistent basis, and then be better in November. You know, you can't be 2-10 in November and tell somebody that you're making progress. And so you kind of have to be comfortable being uncomfortable and do three things to be successful, in my opinion, that you haven't done in the first 3 years. And if you can do those three things, then I think there's something to take a step forward and try and find some momentum. But you have to pick up momentum as the season goes along and continue it. And then the question is, how does this program deal with success? You know, when you win at Maryland in the exciting fashion, you're like, okay, short week, back on the road. How do you deal with success when all of a sudden you have a number next to your name and people are talking about you? And I've worried about that for a while over multiple years, is how does Nebraska deal with success when they start to play well? You know, do they say, this is who we are? Or they're like, uh-oh, we just got exposed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a really great point about basically success looking like doing something you haven't done before. If you win the three non-cons and you beat Rutgers, Maryland, and Michigan State, and you go 6-6 and you get to a bowl game and you get blown out by the three playoff teams, and you play well enough to win, but you don't quite win against Iowa, Washington, and Illinois. It's going to feel like a lot like the same old. It's going to feel like we're treading water. It's going to feel like we're not getting any better. And I feel like even that scenario, people are going to be pretty disgruntled with Rhule. All right, Geoff, I know you've had a question. Please go ahead. Sorry.
No, it's just, we've covered every position group. So offense, defense. So the big offseason thing was with Mike.
Well, let me ask you this. So I think Nebraska, you know, they probably had a roster in year number one where they had a bunch of 4s and 5s. I think they have a roster now that has a bunch of 6s. So another part of the development this year is those 6s, can they be 8s?
Is this out of 10, Gary?
Yes, out of a 10.
Okay.
Can a plethora of 6s they have on this roster, can they be 8s? And is there anybody on this roster that can jump up to be a guy that's a difference maker every Saturday? So I asked this question. If we were having a common fan draft off of this current roster, who would be your first pick?
Wow.
Yeah,
I would say for me, Tony C or Ja'Cory.
Okay, see where I'm going here?
I'd probably go defense. Yeah, but it's so hard to answer that.
What points are you getting on defense, Matt? Can you put a defensive player at your flex position?
Oh, this is an offensive question? Oh, no.
Well, no, I just no. But Gary, your point is a good one. It's a little concerning that all three of us kind of went,
if we can bring Minshew back, I'll put him on my draft.
Oh God, he's never here, Jeff. He was never here.
Thanks, Jeff. Yep. Thanks for the memories, Jeff. All right. Sorry. Just kidding. Love you, buddy.
It's telling that we struggled and paused to come up with an answer to that, though. I get where you're going with that, Gary.
Okay, so I'm going to give you two guys. But they both have to make jumps, and one hasn't played in the Big Ten. I think Owen Chambliss is a dude.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a really good player. And I think it helps that he's playing with his defensive coordinator in the same system and the same exact position that he just got done playing in San Diego. Then I'm going to give you another guy, and this is where the inner workings show me that something's happening. If Pritchett is a captain and Pritchett is one of your best players. So those would be two guys that I would go to. I think Pritchett's development from getting here and being indoctrinated into, we don't do that at Nebraska, and him sticking with it, he didn't bail. and actually got better as the season went along, that his development and taking over that position and maybe giving Nebraska a potential all Big Ten offensive lineman candidate, I think is huge. But those would be two guys that I would pick. But one's got to make another jump, and the other you haven't seen play in the Big Ten yet.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, Gary, and it comes back to the point you made earlier about coaching, right? I think what part of the deal with Rule was that he's supposed to be a developmental guy. Part of the deal with Rule is that he's supposed to get, you know, the absolute most and best out of his players and then some. And part of what I think Husker fans have been waiting to see, like we've gotten out-coached. Mm-hmm. We get out-coached in game. But then you also see like what appears to be a developmental failure when we're falling off a cliff the last three games of the season. So I think it's a really good point, Gary, about, and you've made this point before, even going into last year, I think success for Nebraska is going to have to involve guys currently on the roster who have been on the roster making that leap, right?
Yeah.
Like, and this is kind of putting everybody on a spot here because I have a guy in mind. If you had a look at if someone walked into your office and said, okay, let's say Nebraska has openly identified themselves as a developmental program, because I think Nebraska's kind of stuck in that. They have the resources to play up. They don't have the results to play up. Hell, they don't have the results to play down. If you look at Minnesota and Iowa not beating two teams that you have more and you spend more, but you can't beat. Like, they're kind of in the balance of, okay, we have resources to play up with the big boys, but we also want to be a developmental program. How can we mesh those together like other programs? So I think sometimes Nebraska's in that awkward spot. But I've always advocated, admit that openly that you're a developmental program and see what happens. But if I gave you, if I said, okay, give me the poster child for development at Nebraska in 3 years or 2 years, is there a guy that immediately comes to mind?
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.
All medications require eligibility and prescription. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
Well, Emmett immediately came to mind, but do you mean two or three years from now?
Well, no, Emmett's a prime example. Like whether they Dana discovered him and put him on the field, Emmett still had to develop under Barthel. Okay, there has to be some development in there. Now, a lot of it, EJ is self-made. Kid worked his ass off, but there's some development there. The guy that I was bringing, and this might help this conversation a little bit more, is a guy that might be one of the best centers in college football this year. Isn't Evans but he's on a limited list of like the guy that has developed since he walked in the door.
The other guy I think of is Ty Robinson, where he was good before Rule. I think he was solid before Rule showed up. And some of it might've been by his senior year, it was, you know, a 17th year on the roster, but he was dominant by the end.
Yeah.
Dominant. Right. So that's another guy I think of, and Pritchett is probably another one, Gary.
Yeah.
To your point. I mean, in short order, now the offensive line coach who developed him is gone, but hopefully the structure of the program still helps continue that development.
Now, here's another question I want to pose to you guys, because I'm very interested, because I respect all three of your thoughts. You know, running back room.
You have to respect mine.
No, I do. Sneaky. He'll get in there with a point. do you guys, because there's two areas where they didn't clean house in the offseason. Now, they didn't necessarily add at one position a body, and that's running back. Defensive line, they basically ran it back with everybody, and they added a couple of different pieces. Do you guys think it's a sign? Well, we're all agitated about the defensive line and the running back room, that what they did in the portal tells you everything that you need to know, that one position group, it was on the coach, and the other, they're fine with who they have in the running back room. Because the only guy they lost on the defensive line was Davis. Mm-hmm. Okay. If you're like, oh my God, the defensive line can't stop a Colt. What are we doing here? How can they play in the Big Ten? Isn't it interesting that they brought basically everybody back that could come back?
Yeah. I mean, don't you think that that's more of like, hey, we're running the wrong scheme for what we've got? Like, hey, let's run something that works better for what we're using, right? For what we're playing with here. Yeah. I think that's very telling.
And I think they got a good position. I think Corey Brown is a sneaky, you know, we all wring our hands about, God, it's taken him forever to get a defensive line coach. Is that cost him with guys that are in the portal that are looking and want to find a home? I think because of his connection to Orich and the familiarity and the fact that the guy can coach, I think Corey Brown's going to turn out to be a really good addition for that room. I think he's more of a fit. He's more along the lines of the Terrence Knighton, who, back to your point, TJ, those last 2 years of Ty Robinson, hey, Terrence Knighton was a big reason why Ty took a jump and is now getting paid to play football. I think Corey Brown is closer to that than he was to a guy that really should not have. I think Rule took bad advice from the Kansas City guys to say, hey, hire this guy. He's got a chance. I don't think Braden was ever really, he couldn't be successful in that short amount of time trying to learn to be a college coach and also recruiting.
Yeah. I think that's interesting, Gary, that you say that. Like, for somebody from your perspective, like pro in the industry, people that know a lot about the X's and O's of the football team and all that, that's a great point. But to like a common fan like myself or a lot of the other people out there, they view it more or less as my, like you said, the defensive line couldn't stop a Colt, and oh my God, we haven't done anything to address that issue at the same time.
Like,
kind
of
the perspective I come at it.
Don't you guys think at some point this year, because I believe this, that we'll go, man, what the hell was Riley Van Poppel? Where was he last year? Welcome back. But yeah.
I hope so.
But he's but playing the 4-2-5, he's better suited than he was to play in last year's system. And they put him on the nose where he probably should have been a little bit closer to the edge as a pass rushing defensive tackle. And he just got crushed. And we were like, man, this guy sucks. Yeah. You know? And we're like, where did he go? Where'd the freshman guy that was a backup that they preserved his red shirt? Where did that guy go?
Yeah.
I hope you're both right, Matt and Gary. It's also like, to your point, Jeff, I think it's an optimistic way to look at it. Like, hopefully, right? Yeah. It's hard for me not to go. I've been a little more sour this offseason than most other times, but it's hard for me not to say, well, yeah, they also just kind of swung and missed on about their top two or three tiers of guys at the defensive line in the portal. So we all better hope that's the case, right? And to your point, I will say, Gary, I'm a little more optimistic on your point about running back, simply because we've talked about this several times now. They hired two offensive line coaches from Power Five programs. They spent a big chunk of their money on three starter ready offensive linemen to go with Jenkins and Pritchett. So they're going to be, we talk about the value of being old. They're going to be really old on the offensive line, really experienced and hopefully really good. Liked what I saw in the bowl game from the running backs, which I arguably had not really seen from any of them before. So you throw all that into the blender and it starts to feel, and you look, you know what Berthel's done with other guys. That I'm more optimistic on. I would have loved to have seen in a perfect world, you'd love to see them money whip a proven name brand running back. But I'm a little more optimistic between having a running quarterback who's going to open things up combined with some young talent on the roster and what they did on the offensive line. I'm much more optimistic about the possibility for the run game than I am about the defensive line.
Yeah, it's like it's one of those things where if your offensive line is outstanding, it doesn't matter who the running back is, right? Like I hate this compared to Iowa ever, but it's like Iowa, right? Like their offensive line's good every single year. Name an Iowa running back last year. I mean, Gary probably can, but I don't guarantee you. I can't name who's the Iowa running back. Like before, you know, the year before it was the Caleb Johnson, but it's like usually okay. They have like two or three guys that are toting the rock. And it doesn't really matter who's in there because the offensive line is going to maul people.
Yeah. Maddie, that is a fantastic point because Iowa went from Caleb Johnson, NFL running back, to they moneyballed their running back position last year because they knew that they would have a sturdy offensive line that they could, you know, who is, it doesn't matter who number one is. Can he run? Can he block? Can he catch?
Yep.
Okay. So Nebraska's going from a second day NFL guy. So kind of feels like they're going to money ball the running back position. But I think, you know, as we look at running backs in college, I think they're going to take on the path of the NFL running back. We're not going to overspend for running backs. We're going to try and get running backs and then let's develop one on our own. And then maybe we don't spend $1 million on a running back. We money ball that position together. But that means your high school recruiting's got to be good. So look at it this way. If you go Nelson, who they were extremely high on,
Oh, I did it again, Gary.
You're muted again, Gary. You had that.
Emmett was 1A. Nelson was probably 1C, but they liked Mekhi Nelson a lot. Emmett just took it and ran with it.
Yep.
Then they moved a wide receiver to running back, so they're figuring out Mosey. And then Quentin Ives, who I think Matt Rhule has adopted. I mean, nobody speaks as highly about Quentin Ives as Matt Rhule. And he gave him the resuscitation, but they found a role possibly to be a third down guy. Then, so you're going to kind of moneyball the running back position, but you like Nelson a lot. And then I'm going to give you another guy. I don't think overlook as we go through spring and we go through the offseason that they are mentioning a freshman running back who probably in that small recruiting class fell under the radar in Rhule, spelled differently. But his name has been brought up kind of, you know, nobody has pushed you into, hey, what do you think about that freshman running back? Holgorsen brought him up. So how they attack that position will be interesting, but I think they will look and go, we got our starting five at offensive line right now. We got five old dudes, okay, that we know that they're going to be built differently and we're going to teach them differently how to play offensive line in terms of being more athletic, pushing, getting downfield, that's going to help whoever is running the ball.
I thought you were going to say, Gary, and I know Holgorsen brought up Rhule, the running back Rhule, no H Rhule, and had high praise for him. I thought you were going to talk about Connor Booth from Wahoo Newman.
I don't know. I mean, you know, they've got, he's in the mix. I mean, that's a deep room. I mean, that would be your fifth scholarship guy. You know, can they find a role for him?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
No, but I think at top, I tell you, I've seen bits and pieces of him when he's like, okay, he's matched what I hear from coaches. They do like Mekhi Nelson a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and as you mentioned in the bowl game, I mean, he looked like a running back one.
Yeah. He looked great for a couple of drives.
So that whole offense they usually do. Right,
exactly.
Yeah. It's those other 45 plays that get in the way.
Geoff, did you ever ask your question?
No, but I do. I have to ask this because arguably the brightest spot of last season was special teams and the turnaround in that regard. I don't care about I know that people are trying to make a big deal out of like Mike Eckler's throwing shade at Matt Rhule, blah, 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 blah.
Let's go ahead and do this.
Yeah.
I just want to know, like, is it a good, obviously it's probably not going to be as good as it was last year. We can hope, but is it a good or a bad sign that they're doing like co-coordinators for special teams now? I kind of view it like The Office when they have Michael Scott and Jim Halpert as co-managers in The Office. Does it really bode well? Is this a good thing or a bad thing in your opinion?
Well, I'd also love your thoughts on the shade if you haven't.
Yeah, if you haven't. Yeah.
They're both throwing shade at each other.
My colleague Brandon Vogel described it best.
Friend of the
folks.
He said, one is like a trained house cat and the other is like a young puppy. And those two do not go together. Now, I think, you know, and I like Mike a lot and I've gotten to know him. And I don't like the fact that USC is his 11th stop. And I thought this was going to be one of his last because he was home, you know, he was closer to his family and they were so excited to have him here. But he has higher aspirations than being pigeonholed into a special teams guru. And that's fair.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the communication was like that maybe he was thinking he would have an opportunity. You know, I think Rhule, when he first got here, wanted to learn more about Eckler. And he's like, man, this guy has it down. So that's why Price he stopped going to his position meetings.
Yes.
Okay. He trusts him. I hire a guy who's really, really good. He can do it. I don't need to be looking over his shoulder. And then I see the results on the field.
Right.
So it's unfortunate that they.
Oh.
Like.
There we go. Ah, dang it.
Gary, we're loot. We lost your audio again, Gary.
Dang it. That was some good stuff there. Juicy.
Yeah. We'll get to it. I think I completely agree with the point that, you know, Eckler made the point about it wasn't directly a direct dig at Rule so much, but everyone drew the line to Rule where he said, you know, maybe he did say at my last stop. Yeah. And basically said Rule never came to his position group meetings. But like, to me, that wasn't as like some of the Husker Twitter accounts
made really tried big, to run with that. Yeah.
Really tried to make a big deal about that. Oh, this doesn't reflect well on Rule. The product on the field was really good. Rule's running an entire program and,
don't micromanage me. I think is the way you look at it.
Right. Right.
He's doing a good job. He can handle it.
I think it's also clear, like to Gary's point, the personalities didn't mesh, and the clearly they weren't best buddies, right? Like, I think Eckler's energy is largely a positive on whatever team he's around, but I think in certain ways, like him bouncing around the sideline, I think that irritated Rule.
You could tell.
Annoyed Rule. Yeah.
Touch me.
And
touch
so me. Gary's back. Hello, Gary.
He's back.
Hold on, you're muted.
I apologize. Thank you.
No worries. So we were just talking about how we're in agreement with you. I think some on Husker Twitter really tried to run with, oh, this doesn't reflect well on Rule. And our take was, he's not micromanaging. He's got a program to run, and Eckler's doing a good job.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to get crushed when you're 7-6. When you're 9-3 and a guy leaves, you're like, ah, okay, I get it. It makes sense. Rule won't be known. He won't be remembered for that he fired Ed Foley to hire Mike Eckler. He'll be remembered how he replaced Mike Eckler. Yeah. The punter and the place kicker return, so that's a good start. But Eckler did have a special way he delivered the message, also how he taught. I wonder what happened in the last couple of weeks in terms of returning kicks, if what the philosophy, if there were butting of heads or whatever happened there, because it completely changed. But he also created enthusiasm that special teams were a big deal and guys wanted to be on special teams.
Yep.
Humphrey stayed. He immediately said after Eckler was leaving, I'm staying. I'm not going anywhere, coach. I'd like to be here. And, you know, Rule saw something in him because he let a guy that he knows better in Josh Martin. Now, he told him, you're not getting the job. So that's why Martin went off to coach high school football in Texas. And then you could get Brett Maher, which, you know, makes sense. Why wouldn't you have a place kicker who's gone through all the trials and tribulations of what it is like to be a place kicker being on your staff to help out with kickers that go through things that nobody else can relate to? So it's going to be something that Nebraska can't step back because they made a huge jump and it won a couple of games this past year, or at least put them in a position to win games. And, you know, that margin of error is so small this year, you can't afford to go back into the 100s in efficiency in that.
Yeah, 1,000%. Real quick, I meant to mention this at the beginning. Thanks to all the Common fans who voted for your favorite Common Fan podcast in Michael Severe's best local podcast bracket competition. We took down Nebraska Ball Hour 52-48. So I went to bed and we were up 56-44 or 55-45, something like that. And, you know, I've worked in politics for a long time. If you got a 10-point lead, you're feeling pretty good about yourself. Well, they found some other batches of votes.
They found some votes.
Certain counties hadn't been counted yet. And we woke up and Matt and Jeff and I are like, oh, man, they're closing. They're closing on us. But the Common fans held on. We advanced to the next round. And we are on a collision course now. Well, it's official now. We're going to be facing off with the Pick Six podcast, a daunting task of Tom Chattel, Sam McHugh, and Evan Bland. All three friends of the program, all three have been on here. it's literally my favorite podcast other than the podcast that we do. Like, I've listened to those guys for years. As far as like sort of your traditional podcast, Gary, you're my favorite radio guy. You know,
thank you.
But it's my, I love that podcast. So it's going to be a little bit uncomfortable.
So
we're going to be running the getting out of the vote operation.
I was just going to say, I'm not even going to apologize for it, but we're going to be shamelessly groveling for votes all day, every day. Sorry, I'm not sorry.
Yeah. David versus Goliath.
We love all three of those guys though. So I thought, you know, it'd be kind of like, remember when late in their careers, Larry Bird would play against Magic Johnson. It was just like a love fest. They'd be like hugging and like kissing on the cheek before the game. Like, that's how I view us going against the pick six guys.
Well, it's a lot of respect there. Yeah. Gary, you're in the Average Joe Sports Show, right?
Yes.
So we're in the same bracket as well.
I know.
So if we get past the Pick Six podcast, we're on a collision course with the Average Joe Sports Show. This is all really uncomfortable. I don't like confrontation, guys.
Maybe I will refrain from voting, or I will split my vote in half.
You shouldn't do that.
You got to always vote for yourself. Always vote for yourself.
Okay,
that's what I mean.
But I like this. This is the ground roots against the grassroots campaign against the juggernaut corporate world.
That's exactly right.
There you go.
We are the common men, common fans.
It's like MySpace against Facebook.
No.
It's like Blockbuster against Netflix. No, wait, never mind. Real quick, Gary, if you have a couple more minutes, we did a whole episode with Michael.
I listened.
About the Bill Moose book. Biggest takeaways from the, we don't need to rehash all of that, but like biggest takeaways from sort of the Bill Moose revelations and then his 47 interviews after the book was released.
I can't believe he didn't come on here, to be honest.
He probably would, Jeff. He's selling books.
He needs money. He needs money. I mean, that's a fact. I don't know, when you read about the dysfunction, did you go, oh my God? Or did you go, yeah?
I said, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's just kind of like, okay. That's what's wrong.
I think for me it was like, okay, not shocking, but at the same time, like, damn it. Sometimes when things happen and you see 47 people tweet about it and you think, oh, come on, they're professionals, they're adults, it's certainly not that bad. And then you read about it and you're like, okay, that's all pretty bad.
Title of the episode, it's worse than we thought.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I've got to ask you, Gary, though, the one question that got some of the most attention. We talked about it with Michael. The idea that he's claiming he knew Frost wasn't ready.
We lost Gary.
Maybe he was having sound issues. Gary decided once it came up that one, we're on a collision course in the bracket competition, and two, we're trying to talk about Bill Moose. He's like, forget.
I'm having technical difficulties.
Yes.
If you don't want to talk about Moose, tell us.
I apologize. For some reason, I'm getting knocked off. I got to check to make sure I paid my Google Fiber bill. it just shows you that we are so desperate for football to get turned around. Because if football's going well, people that have no connection to football but think they have a title that says, I've got to have an opinion on football and I have power to change, they all of a sudden have an opinion. But if football's doing well, then people are like, eh, okay. But when football's struggling, everybody and their brother's brother has an answer. And, you know, I mean, we all know this. Nebraska football is political, okay? Sometimes you got to kiss the ring. Sometimes you got to avoid the ring. Sometimes it helps to be really good at the sport, but also to make really, really good hires. Yeah. And, you know, the thing that always be about Moose is he was brought here to hire Frost. He did. Is that on him that it didn't work out? He hired Fred Hoiberg. Fortunately, Trev Alberts gave Fred a little bit of a leash because he was trying to fix football. And while that was going on, Fred fixed basketball. Yeah. So Moose has got kind of an interesting run here. He would be, if Nebraska football was doing well, guys, he would be the next Devaney. He would be sitting in every bar in Nebraska drinking with you and you wouldn't care. You wouldn't tell anybody. You wouldn't take a picture. You wouldn't go to a message board. You'd be like, there's Bill. Bill, come on in. And he'd be the most popular guy going, just kind of like Devaney. But Nebraska football struggled. Moose was in the crosshairs. People didn't like him. He was a puppet. And you saw what eventually happened. And now they're, you know, two athletic directors later. But the fact that, you know, he's been gone for 5 years and this still resonates, I don't know if that shows more about us or more about, God dang, Nebraska has been a mess for a long time.
All of the above.
Yes.
So one thing we didn't spend a ton of time on when we had this discussion was giving Moose a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. One, I do agree the backlash would have been insane if he hadn't landed the plane on hiring Frost. Two, he probably would have been forced to, like you saw how Pillen inserted himself in the basketball hiring conversation. So like maybe his hands were tied. Fundamentally though, do you believe the claim that immediately Frost walks out of the room and he's like, he and his wife both acknowledge, oh yeah, he's not ready? Or is that just kind of a convenient way to frame it after the fact?
No, I think it's true.
Wow.
I think it's true.
Okay.
All right.
Fascinating.
I mean, in a lot of ways, Scott, and I said this on my own radio show, he didn't have the tools in the toolbox to run a Fortune 500 company, to surround himself with people that could help him be successful. He was the same person, but just 20 years older and a different title when he came back to Nebraska.
Yeah. Well, that one more thing, and it was a point I wished I had made when we were talking to Michael. Okay, Moose, you claim you knew he wasn't ready. You also claim you had to hire him anyway. We'll give you the benefit of the doubt on both of those. Then insert yourself a little bit more.
Yep.
Make him hire some coaches who have actually coached in the Big Ten. Provide structure in the way that Albert's tried to do something. Because he brought the golden boy here. He claims he knew he wasn't ready. Well, then he just let him do whatever he wanted. Yep. I mean, that was the recipe for disaster.
TJ, you're spot on. Like, if he would have forced him to hire people around him that didn't know him but were good for Nebraska and good for success, how much of a difference that would have made. But I think it quickly turned where Scott got all the power.
Right.
And, yeah. and then all of a sudden Moose was neutralized. I mean, look at the Oklahoma situation. Hmm. One side tried to get out of the game and the other side didn't know what was happening and had to clean up, you know, the mess on aisle four.
Yeah.
Wild. Yeah.
We'll have you back for a whole different conversation about that and what the media should or shouldn't report when they know it, but we won't drag you there right now.
Well, thank you. What we should report right now is it's okay to be excited for football.
There you go.
It's okay. Nice to have football.
There's your permission slip, TJ.
Yeah,
you get, it's okay to get, you know, turn the corner. There's a little bit of negativity at the end of the season, going into the off season. Mm-hmm. Let's get excited again.
I'm trying, Matt. I am excited. I can't. Sometimes the brain just immediately goes to the worst case scenario. Or when we were talking about the defensive line, you guys were framing it in a positive way. And I think to myself, like you said, Jeff, yeah, but they missed on a bunch of guys in the portal. Like, it's just, I'm trying to break out of that right now. Okay. It's the winter doldrums. It is what it is.
So it almost seems like Rule needs a Fred Hoiberg year where you do more with less, or it's perceived more with less.
Yeah. And it's a, like, it's an undeniable, complete and total, like, breakout and shattering of expectations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. I started this with a question about trust because, you know, there's not really a lot that Rule can do between now and once you get into the core of the season to build trust. What would it be for you guys? Something that you saw that you could start to build trust again in the head football coach at Nebraska?
For me, it would be knocking off one of the playoff teams there's about 17 different things.
I'll tell you.
But I would think more than anything else, like when we talked about doing something you haven't done before, mm-hmm. for me, that just means like showing what you're capable of and then playing at that level most of the time, mm-hmm. right? Or like getting better throughout the season and then peaking in November, mm-hmm. like things like that. So maybe it's not necessarily get one big win or beat Iowa finally or whatever. I'd love all those things to happen, but it's also like, we want to believe that you know what you're doing. We want to believe that, like, you watch Kurt Cignetti coach, and we've made fun of him plenty on this program, but you know, that guy knows what he's doing. Mm-hmm. You know, he's operating at a high level. You know, he's putting people in the right positions to succeed. That's an open question as to whether or not that's happening in Lincoln. So give us some evidence that you do have those answers and you are able to pull those kind of performances out of your players and your coaches and whatever. And let's see it consistently. instead of even the high points we talk about the last 2 years. We started 5-1 both years. And then it's like not showing up against Minnesota or barely hanging on against Rutgers or having to come back against Michigan State, whatever it might be. It's like even the high points are like, when was the last time we put together four quarters, let alone done it for the bulk of a season, right?
Yeah.
All right, Geoff, go ahead.
I agree with that's a good point, like with the Cignetti comparison, him knowing what he's doing. But while that's a good thing, I need like a tangible metric. Like I do need to see like a win or a loss that means something. And I think the best bet this season for us, and Gary, you alluded to it too, is playing, well at home. If we want to beat like a top ranked team this year, I think I want to see us beat Ohio State here. That's what I want. I want that to be the big win this year. That's the victory I want. I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but that would be a tangible metric. Even if we lost every other game, but we pulled that out, hey, we beat a ranked team and that's something to hang our hat on. We need something like that to happen to build some confidence for not only the team, but the fan base as a whole. Yeah. We need that win.
See, I don't need that. Like I
do.
It would be great. It would be absolutely great. Yes. But it's not going to be what gets me excited to go into the 2027 season. Right. Mm-hmm. Like if the win loss record is 6-6 or 7-5, but we played for four quarters with the playoff teams. And then, we beat, what were the three? Illinois, Iowa, Washington, right? Those are the kind of ones that we've decided are toss ups. Beat one or two of those. And if it looks good in November, like, I'm not talking about, you go undefeated in November or 3-1 in November. Like, yeah, I want to win a couple of those. But, like, let me see, like what Gary said earlier, we're clearly, to the untrained eye, a better football team in November than we are in September. And that's not wins and losses. I think
Flip those. We're better in September than November. Is that what you mean?
No, I want to be better in November.
Oh, you're saying that's what you want to see.
I want them to be better in November.
Yeah.
Yeah. So and that doesn't mean wins. To me, it's not wins and losses. Like they better get to a bowl game, don't get me wrong. But that's like the baseline, right? If you're 6-6 and you play really well against the playoff teams, maybe you don't beat them, but you win the games you're supposed to. Maybe you win a toss-up and it looks better in November where we're playing hard, we're playing good D, we're running the ball. That's the measuring stick for me this season, this fall.
Gary, any thoughts on your own question?
No, I think November is pretty important, and I think you gotta beat Iowa. There's a discussion going on about how much Nebraska's roster costs. Well, the teams that don't spend as much money as Nebraska on their roster, you're not beating those teams,
right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yep.
That's a problem.
Yeah. That's got to change because the way you want to play football, you're being beat by those teams that play football that way. And they're both located either to the east or, up north, in Minneapolis.
Yep.
And you've done a good job of other things. Like it seems like every year, and I think TJ, you started this, every year they identify one thing they got to fix in the offseason. Fumbles they fixed. Special teams they fixed. Like, what is the thing in 2026 that they've identified that they will fix? And at the end of the year, you'll go, yeah, you know what? They did fix that, but yet that's still a problem over there.
Yep.
What is that thing in 2026?
Yep. Gary Sharp, friend of the program, always fantastic to talk to you. Let's end on a positive, and we'll use some of Gary's words. This is the life we've chosen, and it's okay to be excited for football.
About that. Yes.
Yeah. There you go.
I mean, there's a, like young guys you've never seen before. It's okay to be excited. You can say, man, I'm excited for spring football. That doesn't mean that you're all of a sudden, oh man, they're going to win 9 games. But we like football, and we have football earlier than we've ever had football. And I don't know. I think this is a very intriguing year because there are so many unknowns. And it can be very uncomfortable, but you know what? Let's figure it out. Instead of going, okay, they're going to do this, and this. They're going to win 7. They may win 5 games. They may win 8 games. Who knows? Because no one knows. And the thing about it is, I think guys in Lincoln who, Rhule has grinded on guys since they got back. I mean, he's pushed staff. He's pushed players. He's pushed off-field staff. I mean, there's a sense of urgency. Does that result to wins? You better hope so. But I think this is they're the great mystery team. And we haven't had that around Nebraska football in a long time.
Yeah.
Whether it's personnel or what they're going to do when they all mesh together. I think that's kind of, it may not be exciting. It's a little bit like, oh, Jesus. But I think it keeps you engaged.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Get ready for 10-2, according to Gary Sharp. any final thoughts or questions from any of the three of you?
No, just thanks.
Yeah. Thank you to Gary for joining us once again.
Thank you, guys.
We always appreciate it.
You're the best, Gary. Thank you so much. Always love having you on. We'll be back at you very soon, Common fans. Keep an eye out. Michael Sabir on Twitter. Follow the Bracket Challenge for the best local podcast. I'm guessing we're a few days away from being up again, but we'll blast it out like we did last time.
Shameless.
Vote for the Common fans. Tell your friends, tell your family. Vote for the Common fans. Gary Sharp, thank you, sir.
Great. Thanks, guys.
We'll be back at you soon. Oh, and hey, Common fans, be kind to each other. We'll be back at you soon. In the meantime, as always, GBR for life.
Holy moly! Man, woman, and child did that. Put them in the aisles.
And Nebraska takes the lead. And the national championship is Nebraska's. Bring that trophy back to Lincoln.